Coming up on Tech News Today, is Chrome in fact the most popular browser, and what does it mean? Also, Google is kind of anti-competitive, at least according to the European Union. But you know who's not anti-competitive? The cable companies. They want to join together to bring you Wi-Fi everywhere you go. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, May 21st, 2012. Tech News Today is brought to you by Ford, featuring all-electric and hybrid electric technologies. Learn more about the technologies Ford is bringing to its vehicles at Ford.com/technology. And by GoToMeeting with HD Faces by Citrix. It just takes a webcam and a click to turn your online meeting into high-definition video conferencing. Meet with colleagues anywhere in the world, even from an iPad. My listeners can try GoToMeeting free for 30 days. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use our promo code TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zachter.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And joining us today from the St. Paul Pioneer Press, tech writer Julio Ojeda Zapata is back with us. Hey, Julio.
Hey, guys.
Thanks for coming back and joining us for Tech News Today.
No problem. I apologize for the backlighting, but we'll live with it.
Well, the sun will go down faster in the central time zone.
We'll be fine.
We have a new most popular browser in the world, according to StatCounter. StatCounter reports for the week of May 14th through the 20th, Chrome averaged a higher traffic share than any other browser. Now, StatCounter counts raw page views based on tracking code they install on about 3 million or so sites around the world. So this is a worldwide number. And they say Chrome had 32.76% of the traffic share in the world on that week, and IE had 31.94%.
So, close race.
Yeah, it's a very close race. And this is the same company that reported Chrome was number one over a weekend earlier this year.
Mm-hmm.
So, Chrome has been inching forward. People have been using it at home a lot, we figure. And now it's finally surpassing IE. What's interesting about this, the lead seems to come mostly from South America. Chrome has 50% of the overall share. IE is still the most popular in North America and Australia. It's barely the most popular in Europe over Firefox. Firefox is the most popular in Africa. Chrome leads in Asia, but just barely. In fact, IE still leads in China, South Korea, and Japan. But in South America, Chrome is king. Why do you think that is?
Is it the Orkut population?
Orkut? Popularity of Google's Orkut service?
Probably, especially in Brazil.
By the way, my wife and I are both from South America, so go team.
Are you a Chrome user?
Yes, I'm a Chrome user. I'm going to come right out and say it. I think the reason Chrome is kicking butt is because it's just the best browser. It took me a while to switch over. I used to be a big Firefox user, but everything that Google is doing with Chrome is basically an operating system. I'm a big fan of the Chrome OS, so when I'm in the Chrome OS, I'm obviously in the Chrome browser environment, and that has sort of filtered over to my browsing on other computers. I like having a unified experience on all my devices, and I love how the Chrome browser is sort of becoming more than a browser. It's becoming an entire experience. And I think Google has done this the best of all the browser makers.
I have my issues with Chrome from time to time. I kind of bat back and forth between Firefox and Chrome. I do use Safari for certain things. I like to be diversified in my browser usage, but I probably spend most of my time in Chrome these days.
I think I'm sure there are people who say, yes, that what Tom does sounds a lot like me. I tend to be a one browser person, and every couple of years I'll switch because, for example, Firefox a couple years ago ended up being a really big resource hog. A lot of people were complaining about Firefox just would drag down their system. Chrome was new at the time. I said, oh, I'll give that a try. I liked the way it looked. And now I'm hooked. When I use another browser, it's only if I just want to check and see if I can replicate an error or if something, the design looks a little bit different in another browser. Because I'm a one browser person, I don't like variety when it comes to the browser experience because I want to just do my stuff and I like my shortcuts the way that they are. So I think a lot of this has to do with if people try Chrome and they like it, then they stay. And more people are doing that.
I find myself using at least three browsers at any given time. That's one of the weirder things. Like, I know I use Opera for certain things, and I use Chrome for certain things. I use Safari for certain things. And even Lynx sometimes still comes back for me because I'm like, this stuff, I know there's way too much code in this thing. I can just read it much cleaner this way.
So you just open a terminal and Lynx it up?
Yeah. So, I mean, like, I think Chrome is just, it's really, really popular just because it's stable. I mean, the thing is the auto-update keeps happening to the point where, you go, oh, it's stable. It's never crashing. Or if it does crash, it's somewhat... It's supposed to be independent.
Yeah, that's when I end up going back to Firefox. Though, every once in a while, there's one of those silent updates that just makes everything really slow and work really awful. And until they work it out, I have to give it like a week.
What does annoy me is the Chrome browser on the Mac. It does not do certain things that the Chrome browser on Windows does. That disparity bothers me a little bit. And I have to say the version of Safari that's coming in Mountain Lion looks extremely appealing aesthetically with the unibar and so forth. And so I'm going to give that a hard look when it's in full release because I think it has promise on the Mac. So there's a possibility on the Mac that I may switch back to Safari.
Now, I'll tell you, the headline that everybody is putting out there is Chrome now the most popular browser in the world. And you can quibble about whether one survey from one company, who some people take issues with their methodology, which is always true with anybody who's doing this sort of work, is going to crown Chrome the new king. But I'll tell you what I take from this is we now have true competition in the browser market. Nobody is dominant everywhere. Mm-hmm. And this was unthinkable back in the days when IE was 90%. Now that we have Firefox has got enough people behind it, Chrome's got enough people using it, IE has enough people using it, even Opera and Safari have significant numbers of people using it, that we have lots of choice and they're all pushing each other to get better all the time. The winner here isn't Chrome, the winner's us.
Well, I'm just thinking about these ones that are gaining, the browsers that are gaining market share are on all the platforms. They're on Windows, they're on OS X, and they're on Linux. I think Chrome and Opera are the ones that actually do all of those. I mean, it might be a sign to Microsoft that maybe they need to get IE on something other than Windows. They used to have an OS X version, or was it Classic? I can't remember which one. But they had a
Microsoft version. They had an OS X version, yeah.
They had one, and that was
years ago that it was updated.
Right, and then Microsoft left that, and Apple had to figure out what to do, and they came up with Safari, and it seems like they could increase market share by introducing some kind of browser for other platforms as well.
Well, let's move on to Google, who's sort of in the position that IE was many years ago in being market dominant, has finally received their marching orders from the EU. Remember that 18 months ago, the EU started investigating Google's search practices. They have found four areas of concern. Joaquin Alumnia, EC Vice President for Competition Policy, put out these four findings and stressed that, quote, we want to get them settled without having to engage in adversarial proceedings. So they're definitely saying, Google, don't make us go to court over this. Let's work this out. Here are the four findings. One, display links to vertical services like maps, images, and news are treated differently than links to competitors and may result in preferential treatment. That's the one we're probably going to talk about the most. Number two, Google may be copying original material from the websites of its competitors, such as user reviews, and using that material on its own sites without their prior authorization.
That's what Yelp had complained about.
Exactly, that kind of scraping of starred ratings, etc. And the last two have to deal with advertising. AdSense agreements, they say, at the EC, result in de facto exclusivity, requiring them to obtain all or most of the requirements of search advertisements from Google. And Google imposes contractual restrictions on software developers, which prevent them from offering tools that allow seamless transfer of campaigns. This is one of Microsoft's complaints, is that you can't go from AdWords to the Microsoft tool very easily. You're kind of locked in to the Google tool. Those last two are contractual things that can be easily negotiated and resolved. The copying of original material, I guess Google could just say, well, let's make an opt-out like we did with Google News. You don't want us to scrape your site? I mean, you could put a robots.txt file up, but fine. We'll create an opt-out situation. But what about that first one saying it's preferential treatment for Google to call out their own map search or image search when you're doing a search?
And that seems strange because Google bought a lot of the properties that some of these results show up to. So let's see a YouTube property show up that way. Well, they bought YouTube because it was really popular. So if this is truly the best thing and you're going to see a spotlight on it, this really, I think it's kind of, it doesn't seem like there's anything wrong with that, especially since it's Google. You can go to another browser. They own all these properties, so they're just promoting their own stuff. What's wrong? Don't other search engines
and
do
isn't
this?
That whole deal with the new Bing thing that all the Bing services are now highlighted in a column?
And I'm kind of, what about the
isn't
fact
that preferential treatment?
They're adding that right pane too with all that data as well that they've talked about. I forget what they call that too now. But this seems strange that it's Google promoting their own stuff. You don't have to use it. What's the big deal?
Well, I mean, I understand that the browser is not supposed to be about, here's the company that's running the browser, and so if you're looking for a map, then we show you Google Map rather than all sorts of maps, which is what the browser was originally supposed to give you as far as results go. It just doesn't work that way anymore, though, and as you make a good point that there are services that we would have wanted to float up to the top of our Google search, but now that Google owns them, it's like, well, hey, hold on a second. That's not fair. You're just pushing your own stuff first. But yeah, it's not impossible to find another product that is similar to Google's own products when you're doing a Google search. You might have to search a little bit harder, but it's not as if they're blocking anything. I think that's the difference.
I'd almost feel like maybe it's one thing if they're doing what they're doing now, which is showing like their top result maps, for instance. And that doesn't feel weird to me. What would feel weird is if you did a search and the entire first page of results were all Google results. And mm-hmm. then you had to go beyond that to even see that there were other things. You can plainly see on a search results page that there are other options. Just so happens that Google's offer, the company that's bringing you the search that you want to use in that particular instance to begin with, puts their results at the top. I have no problem with that.
Julio, where do you fall in search neutrality? Should a search engine be required, and that's what they're calling it in the EU, should a search engine be required to play fair with the results, or should they be allowed to say, ah, you know what, we're spending the money to bring you the search results. We want to prioritize our own products. We're going to do that.
Well, I mean, the middle line between those two extremes is search purity. I mean, if Google Maps or YouTube are the most popular services in their categories, they should filter to the top, and I think the middle ground is where things should be. Google should not be forced to promote a competitor. Should also not artificially emphasize its own products. It should adhere to the purity of the algorithm. That's what makes sense to me.
But should it be the law that they should have to have search purity, or should we just determine that in the marketplace and say, look, if we see Google spike in the results, we'll stop using them and we'll go to Bing? I mean, that's why Google became Google in the first place, is everyone said this search index returns better results than AltaVista and Northern Lights and InfoSeek, and so everybody started using them.
I guess it depends if the EC thinks that the market could never see it fairly because Google's doing it one way or another. I'm just realizing that two of these things are in conflict. You can't scrape somebody else's data and put it up there, but you can't spotlight your own. So you couldn't put a Bing map up unless you get an API, unless you're paying Microsoft, and you can't show your own map. So it seems like they're almost dictating exactly how the search results will be shown. They have to be these ridiculous text links, which is what we're moving away from.
Yeah, and just to clarify, when they say copying original material from the websites, they're not saying it's not okay to link to Bing Maps, right, or it's not okay to link to Yelp. They're saying highlighting it in a way that takes the information out of Yelp and puts it in a star review combined with the other results is essentially taking that information.
Yeah, the Yelp folks go, well, wait a second, no one's actually clicking through because Google already showed the result that doesn't really belong to Google, it belongs to us.
They showed the number of stars and the number and a couple of representative samples. And it was the same argument that news sources were making, which is you show a headline and a first paragraph of our story, nobody's going to click through.
Mm-hmm. And I often will search for things, or restaurants or services, and I'll see like a 4 out of 5 stars, and it's like, okay, that seems like a pretty legitimate business, and I go on my way. So this actually is something that keeps people from clicking through.
I still click through because I don't trust it. I'm like, wait a minute. How did it get 4 stars?
What's the fine
print?
Was
it a bunch of shills in there? Yeah. Like, I don't work for them at all, and I voted 4 stars.
It's that employee's mother.
Yeah. Let's move on to Facebook. Real quickly, Facebook's dominating the news all week last week. Obviously, the IPO dominating the news still. Monday, the first full day after the big glitches on Friday, and Facebook closed down to $34.03. It was even farther down in after hours trading. Remember, it issued at $38, so it's lost $4 off its IPO price, more than 4% off its IPO price in one day. Now, some folks are saying, well, Facebook overvalued itself. Others are blaming the loss of momentum on opening day because of NASDAQ glitches. NASDAQ chief executive Robert Greifeld conceded that the exchange is humbly embarrassed by the situation on Friday, said that it was not our finest hour. And there's even some brokers out there who are threatening to bring legal action against NASDAQ because of the glitches that seem to be involved with canceled orders not getting properly addressed.
Isn't this all, you know, anything within the first week or, I mean, I would argue even the first month, though, is just, it's jittery, weird market IPO. It should self-correct. I don't really see lawsuit over the very first day with attention being skewed towards Facebook the way that it's not going to be going forward.
The lawsuit would be about the glitches in the NASDAQ system where it's like, look, I tried to place an order. I tried to cancel an order. It didn't go through. It didn't get canceled. I didn't get confirmations. And so it messed up my trading strategy. That I can sort of see. The idea of people getting really weirded out about the price of the Facebook, all we're seeing that's different is there was no big bump that first day. Instead of a big bump, we went straight to the fall. But that seems to be what the IPOs have done recently with tech. They have a big bump on the first day, and then they fall below issue price. That's happened to Zynga. It happened to Groupon. It's happened to a lot of different stocks. However, there's some good news for Mark Zuckerberg, and that's that he got married on Saturday.
Oh, isn't that nice? Yeah, you would have thought that Mark Zuckerberg would have been like, wow, finally it's Friday night, TGIF, I am just going to chill, I'm going to lay low this weekend. It's been a big couple of months for me. Not so. Had to have a surprise wedding on Saturday.
Or maybe he made a promise a while ago. He's like, look, I'll marry you when we IPO. And that's never going to happen.
Well, it was a big week, right? Yeah, exactly.
I'm never
going to IPO. Crap, right. Now I have to IPO. Priscilla Chan, his longtime girlfriend, just graduated from medical school. So they invited everyone over for a graduation party and then turned it into a wedding without telling everybody. It was sort of a surprise. Ha-ha. Now that we have you all here to celebrate graduation, we're going to get married in front of you. Try and stop us.
You know what's cooler than an IPO? Getting married.
I don't know that that's always true. Depends on the
people. No, not always, but in this Facebook case, yes.
Yeah, I think from what I heard, and I wasn't there, nor was I invited, nor do I know anyone who went, I think it was the wedding had been planned for some time. The IPO just happened to end up falling on the Friday previous. So
I could see them planning the graduation and the surprise wedding all at the same time.
Yes, that's quite a while ago.
That seems like a good way to trick all of the people you'd want to be at your wedding into showing up. Right?
Well, I guess when you're Mark Zuckerberg, surprise weddings are not just a way to surprise your friends and family, but keeps press from going to your house, which I guess where the wedding
and they
was.
Had it at, yeah, at
and having
house,
helicopters
right?
And all sorts of unsavory things that tend to mar a wedding day.
Julio, what interested you more, the Facebook stock price or the wedding?
Well, on the stock price, not my area of expertise, but I'm going to point you to a Henry Blodgett article on Business Insider, which says, well, now that everyone has sobered up, let's figure out what Facebook is actually worth. It's a really, really good piece. I recommend people check it out. On the wedding front, I was stunned that Mark Zuckerberg didn't wear his hoodie, but I suspect his girlfriend said, if you want to marry me, you're getting into a suit, Buster.
And not one of those hoodie suits that just has a printout of a suit on the front.
Who says that he isn't wearing a hoodie underneath the suit? You know,
he's always wearing a hoodie inside.
Yes.
And apparently he designed the ring for the wedding and the whole thing. I think this is all very cute. I'm impressed that these two have managed to hold on, you know, keep their relationship solid and genuine through a whole series of circumstances that would have spoiled other people. You know, you usually expect when somebody gets really successful, you know, their old flames go by the wayside. You know, they get out there and party. And I'm impressed that Mark Zuckerberg and his girlfriend has sort of held on all this time.
Especially after the movie came out, right?
Yeah. And this really humanizes Mark Zuckerberg. I'm sort of inclined to distrust the guy, but, you know, a guy who's shows so much, so faithful to his girlfriend over all this time. You know, how bad can the guy be?
Big Beard in the chat room, who is watching for us live for one of the rare times because he happens to be in the Bay Area, speculated that they might be honeymooning in Farmville.
Oh, Tom. Oh, Big Beard in chat.
Let's take a break and thank our sponsor. This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Ford, featuring all electric and hybrid electric technologies. And there are two new vehicles Ford is bringing to the electric technologies we want to tell you about today. The 2012 Ford Focus Electric and the 2013 C-Max Energy Plug-in Hybrid. Both models make use of regenerative braking that captures back over 90% of the kinetic energy that's usually just lost when you're braking to friction. You use that energy to recharge the car, sends it to the energy pack for later use, includes a unique sync with My Ford Touch EV features to help you maximize your range, and a suite of driver information systems on board that help you manage the recharge process, determine the eco-friendly driving routes, remotely control vehicle charging and preconditioning settings, make sure you monitor that battery state, maximize energy efficiency so you always got it charged to the perfect amount. It's a unique execution of Sync with My Ford Touch that lets driver connect technology optimize for electrified driving for configuring vehicle information like your fuel level, your battery power level, so you know how many miles you have left. My Ford mobile smartphone app, so you can access your vehicle status, such as the state of charge and current range, so you know if you need to charge it a little longer before you take off and get in there. Value charging powered by Microsoft allows Ford customers to reduce their electricity costs by taking advantage of off-peak or reduced rates from their utility. The new 2012 Ford Focus Electric charges in 3 to 4 hours through a 240-volt home charging station. The Leviton charging stations recommended by Ford are available through your dealer. 100% electric, zero CO2 emissions with a lithium-ion battery that enables a topping-off charge without reducing the lifespan of the battery. The 2012 Ford Focus Electric will be available for reservations right now, and the 2013 Ford C-Max Energy Plug-in Hybrid is coming in fall 2013. Now, the specs are subject to change with the production vehicle, but you can learn more about the electric technologies that Ford's putting in its vehicles at Ford.com/technology, and we thank them for their support of Tech News Today.
Something really interesting happened to me with electric cars, and I'll keep this really short. I recently wrote a major story on electric cars. I test drove Mitsubishi, a Nissan, a Chevy, and that story appeared in the paper. And then very shortly after that, I got a call from a guy who lives one block from the St. Paul Pioneer Press. And he said, "Hey, you want to drive a real electric car?" And I learned at that point that a Tesla owner was, you know, lived.
Nice.
Yeah, and so I got to test drive a Tesla, and that was great. What an amazing car.
Very cool.
Yeah.
All right, let's pick up with China approving the Motorola Mobility acquisition over the weekend, required that Android be free and available without discriminating against any particular device maker for 5 years. But otherwise, the $12.5 billion deal can go through. Google gets their hands on 17,000-plus patents. A Motorola spokesperson said they thought that the deal would close early next week. An 8K form filed today, however, said that the companies are moving to close the transaction within 2 business days. But definitely by mid-next week, we should see Motorola as part of Google. And that might be bad news if you work there. There's TechCrunch reporting that the acquisition could be followed by layoffs. Now, originally they'd reported a large percentage number, then that disappeared from the story. So we don't know how many. But Google may be planning to do some cuts as soon as they get a hold of Motorola.
Well, that doesn't surprise me. Usually acquisitions, when it's a company as big as Motorola is never without some downsizing and making sure that there aren't departments that don't need to be there. That said, I mean, it's good. It's good for Google. It's good for Motorola that this went through. I know China was sort of the big, if they had an issue with it, it would be a problem.
It was the last main country. Yeah,
there were a few that required a sign off, I guess. But we've said this before. I mean, it's about the patents, right? I mean, Google is potentially working with Asus on their, well, they are working with Asus on their Google tablet out later, not Motorola. So, I mean, it's not as if Motorola is the end-all be-all as far as their product arm.
Julio, do you expect to see Google selling Motorola in a while?
I'm not really sure, but the whole Google-Motorola thing fascinates the heck out of me. There was a story, I think, just today about how Motorola is pissing off certain Android handset users because the Android handset users, I think, reasonably expected ice cream sandwich to be put on their machines at some point. And Motorola said, "Oh, you know, we don't think, you know, this is going to improve your experience. So we're just going to make the decision not to upgrade your phone." And I was like, "Wait, isn't Motorola and Google really tight. What's the deal here? And so that, I'm not sure how to interpret that, but it just, this whole situation fascinates the heck out of me.
This condition being put on Google saying, like, you have to keep Android open and free and you can't discriminate, must actually seems really like it would be really easy for Google to say, sure, of course we'll do that. Because when they were buying Motorola...
Tell you what, we'll even open source it.
When they were buying Motorola in the first place, they had to tell all their hardware partners, look, we are not going to just limit Android to Motorola. It's going to be available for everybody. We want to make sure that Samsung, you still make it. We want to make sure that HTC, you still do this. Because we make money on this no matter what. So please... please continue to use Android all you want. So to say, like, okay, well, put my arm behind my back and I'll have to keep this open for you. It's like, well, that's fine for Google. This is what they wanted to do anyway. So,
well, you can say all you want. Once the acquisition actually takes place, we'll see what
it definitely looks good for their partners, yeah, too. But I'm really curious about what kind of effect this could have on that. There was that story that Google is going to introduce a bunch of devices and give early access to certain device manufacturers for the Nexus line of tablets and phones. And the rumor was Thanksgiving. Will that change anything, or is that going to cause, I guess, way more than five devices?
Well, we can be using those devices on a brand new Wi-Fi network soon, thanks to your local cable company.
Yeah, if you're a customer of Bright House, Cablevision, Comcast, Cox, or Time Warner Cable, those five...
big five.
Yeah, the big five, pretty much. They're teaming up on Wi-Fi for cable internet subscribers, 50,000 metropolitan Wi-Fi hotspots, in a combined network, everyone playing nice together across the U.S. anyway.
Cable companies cooperating on something.
On an initiative called Cable Wi-Fi. They
fancy
really thought
name
about this name, and this is what they came up with. Well, you know, it's descriptive anyway. So it's available to any customers who are already subscribed to cable internet packages with any of these participating companies. So quite possibly might be you. Cablevision and Bright House Networks have actually already launched cable Wi-Fi access in both New York City and a couple places in Central Florida, Orlando and Tampa, I believe, with Los Angeles and Philadelphia, as well as the greater boroughs of New York, rolling out over the next couple of months. So the deal is, so I'm a Comcast Xfinity subscriber. I have cable internet, username and password. That's fine. Let's say I'm roaming around. I might see something like Comcast Wi-Fi 1 pop up in my Wi-Fi list if I'm in an area that's near a hotspot. At that point, I would select it, and then I sign in with my Comcast, my username and my password, because I'm authenticating myself as a paying subscriber. And at that point, I'm on their Wi-Fi.
This would be a perfect candidate for Hotspot 2.0 that we were talking about a while back.
Which wouldn't even require a username and password at all.
The whole idea is that it tells that your phone is authenticated. Once you authenticate it once, you never have to log in again on any of the Wi-Fi hotspots that are in the network. And this is a big network. Nothing that I read said that they're going to be using that technology, but they should.
That would be a perfect case for this. If you're wondering, well, how would I possibly know where there were hotspots near me? It looks like most of these companies will have a little free. There's a Wi-Fi finder app that you can download if you're, depending on what your OS is, to figure out what hotspots are near you. And it would compete with municipal Wi-Fi initiatives. We've heard a lot about them. There are a few cities I can think of where there's free public Wi-Fi that people are generally happy with. But that's the sort of thing that you would have, 5 years ago, we heard about, well, all cities are just going to have all this public Wi-Fi, and it's harder than just wanting to put up a few Wi-Fi networks.
The dream of 2004.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Before they realized that sometimes Wi-Fi is really spotty, and then people complain about it, and they don't use it anyway.
Wait, it's not as easy as just sticking a bunch of antennas up?
No, it isn't.
Well, then
Minneapolis is one example of a municipal Wi-Fi network that has worked. It's one of those rare cases of a network that they put it out there, and it seems to be doing fine. And I'm glad it's there, because I when I heard about this cable Wi-Fi thing, I checked. I'm a Comcast subscriber. I checked to see, oh, great. I wasn't aware of hotspots in my area, but I'm going to check and see where those are. And it turns out there are none. The Comcast hotspot activities is clustered on the Eastern Seaboard, and that's it. So before people get excited about this, they should check and see, to what extent it benefits them. And in some cases, it may not benefit them at all.
Yeah, you have to be one of those cities that Sarah mentioned, because they're not rolling it out nationwide yet. It's going to take a while.
Municipal Wi-Fi also got hamstrung by legislation that made sure that it was really slow. So if this is, if this cable Wi-Fi can be fast enough that you're like, oh, this is fine, I can use this, I think that's going to be a benefit. Because I know when I was a commuter, there was always Xfinity at the train station, and that was way faster than anything I could get on my phone.
Yeah. And the big thing here, if you're like, well, wait a minute, I've had Wi-Fi through my cable company for a long time, what's the big deal? It's that if you are not an Xfinity customer, you're a Time Warner customer, but you're at that train station where I as used to get Xfinity, you can use that Wi-Fi hotspot now. It's the cooperation.
They're working together.
Of everybody together.
To kill the municipal. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, exactly, right.
They're just hoping that you sign up and pay them.
Speaking of killing, though, let's kill the Kinect with Leap.
Let's do that.
A cheap way to do motion control of your computer.
Yeah, Leap Motion unveiled something called Leap 3D, which brings motion control to computers via a USB device, and it's dirt cheap. It's $70. Now, here's how this works. Could you run the video? Yep. The Leap recognizes and tracks your hand movements in the air in 3D space using sensors and camera. The cameras in the and Leap software. The system creates a three-dimensional interaction space of 4 cubic feet. Now, in the video, you can see that somebody's using a finger and to just control the, I guess, cursor on the screen. You could use a pencil to do some fine control. It recognizes multiple hands. It recognizes pinch and zoom functions. And it just seems like it's trying to change the way you interact with the computer entirely. Also works with game demos.
Is it better than the Kinect? I mean,
accuracy-wise, yes. Now, yeah. Leap says that it can its device can sense motion down to the most subtle movements of a finger, which the company says is 200 times more sensitive than anything else on the market. And it's about 100 times more sensitive than the Kinect itself. So it's really, really supposed to be, you can do really fine pinpoint things. Because they're showing gaming as well, and some things like shooting a gun. It's really a video definitely worth looking at.
It's kind of like a multi-touch meets motion control.
Yeah,
because they're doing some things that look like Kinect controls, but then other things they're doing look like they're doing a touchscreen, but they're not actually touching the screen.
Not touching the screen, so you don't have any fingerprints on there. The actual device is tiny. Leap is introducing an SDK, and the device is going to work on OS 10 and Windows 7 and higher with Linux support on the agenda. So it's going to work on everything at some point. Leap's giving out the devices to developers now if you qualify. Actually, you have to apply now because you'll receive those in 1 to 3 months. If you want to order it, it's available pre-order at leapmotion.com. The consumer version is going to ship in the winter. And if you're wondering if it's going to run on your computer or not, the CEO of Leap, Michael Buchwald, told CNET that the technology that made this possible wasn't due to the latest processors or recent hardware, which implies that Leap could actually work on older machines. They haven't written the specs yet of what exactly you need to have to run this kind of thing.
But cool stuff, nonetheless. I highly recommend going and checking out the video if you haven't had a chance. All right, folks, let's move on to the news fuse. Now, you may be thinking you need a fix of Ghost Recon before Ghost Recon Future Soldier launches tomorrow. So who are you going to call? Facebook Buster. The Facebook game Ghost Recon Commander is available now, and since it's on Facebook, it encourages social behavior, of course. Players are encouraged to work together to fight the ghosts.
No, you guys.
There's nothing to do with ghosts, actually.
It's been a long time since I rocked and rolled.
Oh, yeah?
You're Led Zeppelin.
But it hasn't been that long since Apple filed for a preliminary injunction to ban import of the Samsung Galaxy Tab 10.1 in the U.S. You see what I did there? I don't even know what I did there. That happened on Friday. So Apple claims Samsung is infringing on Apple's design patents. If Apple is granted the injunction, it could force Samsung to redesign the Tab like it had to do in Germany.
You know, what the world needs now is love, sweet love. Aww. And another social network, apparently, because Microsoft has taken Social out of beta. That's SO.CL. First introduced last year, Social is focused on students. And while open to any user, Microsoft told CNET that, quote, it is an experimental research project focused on the future of social experience and learning, especially among younger people, which means they're probably not putting a whole lot of money in it.
Say you want a revolution?
Yeah.
You did. Well, you didn't say that, but I guessed. Well, you're going to get it because Comcast introduced its X1 UI at the cable show in Boston. The new UI creates a unified home for on-demand streaming, DVR video, and real-time video. The X1 also includes apps like Facebook and Pandora. New UI is going to roll out in Boston first. And then roll out nationwide.
Okay.
One quick comment about that. I think Comcast is one of the unsung heroes in UI design. I'm talking specifically about what they're doing in the browser on the desktop and also on the iPad. They've made great strides in providing a really attractive, elegant, clean experience. And this is sort of an extension of that.
I think all of them have gotten better. DirecTV is huge strides from where it was 4 or 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Tonight, we are young. but we're not going to set the TiVo stream on fire. Because the new device introduced today allows users of TiVo Premiere or Premiere Q to stream video to the iPhone and iPad. Unlike the Slingbox, TiVo Stream will let you stream to multiple devices without messing with your living room set-top box. TiVo also unveiled another set-top box that lets people view from their Premiere or their Q from any room in their house. Both products will launch later this year.
I can't top that kind of fun. Time to pour out a little bit for Microsoft's Aero Glass. Microsoft has curb stomped the glassy look and has moved to a flattened metro-like look for its Windows 8 desktop. When Unleaked noticed that Windows 8 release preview will come with several pre-installed metro-style apps for sports, news, and travel. The release preview is expected the first week of June.
You know, HTC and Trey Radcliffe have something in common. Stuck in customs. Remember those HTC phones that are held up U.S. Customs? On its investor relations site, HTC says that some of its products have passed review and have been delivered to telecoms in the U.S. However, HTC would not give specifics as to which devices are getting through. I'm not sure why. The Inside Sprint Now blog says the HTC Evo 4G LTE is making its way to Sprint and will be delivered by May 24th. So apparently, that's one of them.
Quick, what's a good breakup song?
It's hard to say goodbye.
Yes.
Yeah,
Boys
nice.
To Men is sponsoring this next News Views item. Yahoo will sell 50% of its stake in Alibaba for the sum of $7.1 billion. The two companies have also agreed that the remainder of Yahoo's interest in Alibaba will be sold off in later stages. As we reported, we talked about it last Friday, the LA Times reports that the deal is structured to make it more attractive for Alibaba to IPO by 2015.
Oh, Tannenbaum. Oh, sorry, Joel Tannenbaum. The U.S. Supreme Court will not review your case. Tannenbaum is subject to a $675,000 fine for sharing files after losing a case to the RIAA. Tannenbaum appealed the jury award as unconstitutionally punitive, but the Supreme Court decided not to review the case. That means Tannenbaum will have to retry the cases in lower courts.
If News Views wasn't random enough for you, how about Randomizer?
Randomizer.
Now, this is something the St. Paul Pioneer Press actually covered, right, Julio?
Yep.
The Clothbot.
Yes.
A robot that grips and climbs on the wrinkles in your clothing.
I don't know what this is good for, but I love it. Clothbot. Well, look at him go.
In the video, it's sped up around 3 times, so it means it's really slowly creeping up your clothing. So I don't know if that would be kind of annoying or not, but...
Do you know how unnerving this would be if you were just... feeling the Clothbot climbing around
yeah,
on you.
Yeah, no kidding. It was presented at the IEEE International Conference on Robotics and Automation in Minnesota. Julio, do you know what its purpose in life is other than just climbing the wrinkles in your clothes?
This robotics conference was held just a couple of blocks from my office, and it was quite the thing, and Richard Chin of the Pioneer Press wrote the definitive piece on it. I'm going to very quickly read you 2 paragraphs here. The conference included presentations on robots modeled after swimming fish, slithering snakes, and octopus limbs. Here's where you could learn about work that is being done on dancing robots, running robots, hopping robots, climbing robots, and wearable robots. And there were discussions of robots capable of walking upstairs, clinging to clothing, learning language, recognizing humans, and taking commands from mobility-impaired infants.
Clothbot was designed by researchers from the Chinese Academy of Sciences and the Chinese University of Hong Kong as a proof of concept. The developers suggested it could be used as a toy, possibly a method of body inspection, maybe some medical uses.
Well, TSA feeling you up. You're like, okay, let the robot touch me.
Clothbot. Do your worst.
Or I like this one, a mobile phone that climbs around on your shoulder while you talk.
Like a parrot? I like it. So we can be like pirates.
It's my little Clothbot friend.
Like, your signal's going in and out. No, my phone's just climbing around on my neck again.
What do you mean, what's he for?
A little shiatsu.
He's just here. Right
there.
That's what you named your Clothbot?
Fantastic.
Lonely.
Yeah.
Who wouldn't want a Clothbot?
Exactly. All right. Let's before we get to the calendar, let's thank our other sponsor for today's show, Citrix's GoToMeeting. You got colleagues working from home, you got colleagues traveling, and you still need to get everyone together for a meeting. But if you get them on the phone, you can't see them, you can't show them stuff. We've got the solution. GoToMeeting with HD Faces. Your team can be face-to-face while online no matter where they are. It takes only seconds, and it's really easy. GoToMeeting.com. By Citrix allows you to collaborate on files and plans online. And with HD Faces, you just need a webcam to turn it on. You can even participate on the go using the built-in camera on the iPad. You can see people's facial expressions, see their body language, communicate like you're there in the room with them, not trying to guess if they're happy or sad or understanding. You can see them face-to-face. Just download the free GoToMeeting app to join. We use GoToMeeting here for meetings all the time. It's really helpful to see the folks in person, and it makes things more productive. Don't take our word for it, though. See how easy GoToMeeting with HD Faces is. Our listeners can try it free for 30 days. Don't wait for the special offer. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use the promo code TNT. Be sure to use that promo code TNT. And we thank Citrix and GoToMeeting for their support of Tech News Today. Onward to the calendar.
The Motorola Droid Razr and the Razr Max are both getting Ice Cream Sandwich, a.k.a. Android 4.0, in the second quarter of this year. The Bionic is getting it in the third quarter. So Ice Cream Sandwich rolling out two more devices, slowly but surely. Linux kernel 3.4 is out. This update focuses on support for newer processors and graphics cards, AMD's Trinity and Radeon HD 7000 series, NVIDIA's Kepler, plus graphical component inside Intel's Medfield mobile chip. And you might have been following the SpaceX Dragon launch that wasn't over the weekend, which was disappointing, but they've scheduled another launch attempt tomorrow, 3:44 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Be there. And hopefully they don't have to bail out at the last possible second, which is what happened on Saturday.
I know, but you know what? That's how they learn. That's good. It's all part of the normal safety procedures and figuring out what's right. I'm cool with that. Let's check what's incoming before we go.
Incoming message.
Got an email from Andrew. He wrote us a nice long email about Windows Phone 7 Marketplace, but wanted to point out particularly that the reason they're forcing the Windows Phone 7.5 upgrade isn't because of a security risk that would affect end users. It's to enable marketplace encryption to prevent app piracy. Now, there's a security element for end users there, but the Windows Phone Marketplace doesn't currently have encryption to prevent people from pirating apps. If you know what to do, you can download app packages without paying for them. Microsoft added support for marketplace encryption in 7.5, but left it disabled on their marketplace servers until enough people upgraded their phones. It appears enough people have upgraded now, and they're flipping the switch. But this will break all 7.0 phones' access to the marketplace, which is why they're warning people to upgrade now or lose the access. Thanks for the clarification, Andrew. Appreciate that. And that is it for this show. Thank you to everyone who submitted stories in our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com. It's the place to go to vote stories up or down and let us know what kinds of stories you'd like us to talk about every day. Julio Ojeda Zapata, the St. Paul Pioneer Press, thank you for joining us. And let folks know where they can find your work online.
You can find me on Twitter at OJEZAP, and you can find my homepage at OJEZAP.com, and that'll lead you to all the other things that I do.
You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, TNT@twit.tv, or give us a call. Our phone number is 260-TNT-SHOW. Father Robert Ballester joins us tomorrow. We'll see you then.